frowned. You mean that if magic could start it, even though we don't know how to cure the plague, magic may be able to stop it? Is that what you're suggesting?
Shota shrugged. I know no more how to start a plague than to cure it. I know magic started this one. If magic started it, then it would stand to reason that magic could halt it.
Colin straightened. Then there is hope we can stop it and save all those people from dying.
Possibly. If we were to put the pieces together, it would at least suggest that Jagang stole from the Temple of the Winds magic to start the plague, and that the temple is trying to warn Richard of the violation.
Why Richard?
Why do you think? What makes Richard different from anyone else?
Colin felt transfixed by Shota's small, sly smile.
He's a war wizard. He has subtractive magic. It's how he defeated the spirit of Darkin Rawl and stopped the Keeper. Richard is the only one with the power to do whatever it is that can help.
Keep that in mind, Shota whispered into her teacup.
Colin was suddenly getting the feeling that she was being led down a path. She dismissed the feeling. Shota was trying to help. Colin gathered her courage.
Shota, why did you send Nadine?
To marry Richard.
Why Nadine?
Shota's lips spread in a sad smile. It was the question for which she had been waiting.
Because I care about him. I wanted it to be someone in whom he could find at least some small comfort.
Colin swallowed.
But he finds comfort in me.
I know, but he is to marry another.
The flow of the future tells you this? Your future memory?
Shota gave her a single nod.
It wasn't your idea? You didn't simply want to send someone to marry him so I wouldn't?
No.
Shota leaned back in her chair and stared off into the trees.
I saw that he will marry another. I see great pain for him in this. I exerted all my influence so that it would be someone he knew, someone in whom he would find at least some solace. I wanted to spare him as much pain in it as I could.
Colin didn't know what to say. She felt as she had when she was struggling against the flow of water down in the drainage tunnel when she was fighting Marlin. She remembered the weight of the water, the way it pinned her in place.
But I love him,
was all she could think to say.
I know, Shota whispered back. It was not my choice to have him marry another. I was only able to influence who it would be.
Colin struggled to pull a shaky breath as she looked away from the witch woman's ageless eyes.
I had no say, Shota added, in who would be your husband.
Colin's gaze returned to Shota.
What? What do you mean?
You are to be wedded. It is not Richard. I could not influence that part of it. That is not a good sign.
Colin felt stunned.
What do you mean?
The spirits are somehow involved in this. They would only accept limited influence. They have their reasons for the rest of it. Those reasons are veiled from me.
Colin felt a tear run down her cheek.
Shota, what am I to do? I'll lose my only love. I could never love anyone but Richard, even if I wished it. I'm a confessor.
Shota sat still as stone as she watched Colin.
The good spirits have granted us all they could in allowing me to have a say in who will be Richard's bride. I searched and could find no other woman for whom he feels even this limited empathy. She was the best I could do. If you truly love Richard, then you should try to find comfort in the fact that he will have Nadine, a woman he knows and for whom he at least has some feeling, however small. Perhaps, with a woman such as this, he will someday find happiness and come to love her.
Colin put her trembling hands in her lap. She felt sick to her stomach. It would do no good to argue with Shota. This wasn't her doing. The spirits were involved.
To what purpose? What good will it do for him to marry Nadine, for me to be mated to one I don't love?
Shota's voice came soft and compassionate.
I don't know, child.
Just as some parents, for a variety of reasons, choose their children's spouses, so have the spirits chosen for you and Richard.
If the spirits were involved, why would they desire our misery? They took us to that place so we could be together.
Colin struggled against the weight of the floodwaters.
Why would they want to do this to us?
Perhaps, Shota whispered as she watched Colin, it is because you will betray him. Colin's throat clenched shut, locking her breath in her lungs. The prophecy screamed through her head.
For the one in white, his true beloved, will betray him in her blood.
Colin shot to her feet.
No!
Her hands balled into fists.
I would never hurt him. I would never betray him.
Shota calmly sipped her tea. Sit down, Mother Confessor. Colin fought to keep the tears back as she sank into her chair. I don't control the future memories any more than I control the past. I told you, you must have the courage to hear the answers. She tapped a finger to her temple. Not only here, she tapped the finger over her heart, but here too. Colin made herself take a deep breath.
Forgive me. It's not your fault. I know that.
Shota lifted an eyebrow. Very good, Mother Confessor. Learning to accept the truth is the first step to gaining control of your destiny.
Shota, I don't mean this to sound disrespectful, but seeing the future does not provide all the answers. Before, you told me that I would touch Richard with my power. I thought that would destroy him. I tried to kill myself to prevent your words from coming to pass, to prevent myself from hurting him. Richard wouldn't allow me the chance at suicide. As it turned out, your seeing of the future was true, but there was more to it, and it turned out differently than we thought. I touched Richard, but his magic protected him, and my touch didn't harm him.
I didn't see the result of the touch, only that you would touch him. This is different. I see you both being wedded.
Colin felt numb. Who is it to be that I will marry?
I see only a misty form. I cannot see the person. I do not know his identity.
Shota, I was told that a witch woman seeing of future events is a form of prophecy.
Who told you this?
A wizard. Zed.
Wizards, Shota muttered. They don't know what is in a witch woman's mind. They think they know everything.
Colin pushed her long hair back over her shoulder. Shota, we were going to be honest with each other, remember?
Shota let out a dainty grumble. Well, I guess that in this case, they may be mostly right.
Prophecy does not always turn out how it seems. The dire dangers can be avoided or changed. Do you think there is any way I can change the prophecy?
Shota frowned. The prophecy?
The one you mentioned, betraying Richard.
Shota's frown deepened into suspicion. Are you saying that this was also foretold in a prophecy?
Colin's eyes turned away from the witch woman's intense gaze. When the wizard came, with Jagang possessing his mind, Jagang said that he had invoked a prophecy to trap Richard. It, too, says I will betray him.
Do you remember this prophecy?
Colin rubbed her finger around the rim of her teacup. It's one of those memories that we spoke of, the memories we wish we could forget, but we can't. On the red moon will come the firestorm. The one bonded to the blade will watch as his people die. If he does nothing, then he and all those he loves will die in its heat. For no blade forged of steel or conjured of sorcery can touch this foe. To quench the inferno, he must seek the remedy in the wind. Lightning will find him on that path, for the one in white, his true beloved, will betray him in her blood.
Shota leaned back, taking her teacup with her. It is true, as you say, that the events in prophecy can be altered or avoided, but not in a double-bind prophecy. This one is such a prophecy, a trap that ensnares its victim. The red moon proves that the trap has sprung.
But there must be a way.
Colin pushed her hands back into her hair.
Shota, what am I to do?
You are to be wedded to another, she whispered, as is Richard. What is beyond, I don't see. But this much of it is the future.
Shota, I know you're speaking the truth. But how can it be that I would betray Richard? I'm telling you the truth. I would die before I would betray him. My heart won't allow me to betray him. I couldn't.
Shota smoothed a loose wisp of her dress.
Think, Mother Confessor, and you will see that you are wrong, just as I showed you that you were wrong that I could no longer harm you. How? How could I do such a thing when I know it isn't in me, for any reason, to betray him?
Shota took a patient breath.
It is not nearly so difficult as you wish to think. What if you knew, for example, that you had only one way to save his life, and that way was to betray him, but in so doing you would lose his love? Would you make the sacrifice of his love to preserve his life? The truth now.
Colin swallowed past the lump in her throat.
Yes, I would betray him if it was to save his life.
So you see, it is not as impossible an event as you imagined.
I guess not, Colin said in a small voice.
She pushed at a few crumbs on the table.
Shota, what is the purpose of all this? Why would the future hold that Richard will marry Nadine, and that I will marry another man? There must be a reason. It goes against everything we both want, so there must be some force pushing events down that path.
Shota said, after a moment's deliberation, The Temple of the Winds hunts Richard. The spirits have a hand in this. Colin's face sank wearily into her hands.
You said to Nadine, May the spirits have mercy on him. What did you mean by that?
The underworld contains more than just the good spirits. The spirits, good and the evil, are all involved in this. Colin didn't want to talk anymore. It was too painful, talking about the ruination of her dreams and hopes as if they were pieces on a game board.
To what purpose? She mumbled.
The plague. Colin looked up.
What?
It has something to do with the plague and the thing of magic the Dreamwalker stole from the Temple of the Winds.
You mean that it could be that this could somehow be part of our attempt to find the magic to stop the plague?
I believe it is so, the witch woman said at last. You and Richard are desperately seeking a way to stop the plague and save the lives of countless people. I see in the future that you each wed other people. For what other reason would both of you make such a sacrifice?
But why would it be necessary?
You seek something I cannot answer. I cannot alter what will be, nor do I know the reason for it. We are forced to consider the possibilities. Think. If the only way to save all those people from dying in a firestorm of plague were for Richard and you to sacrifice your life together, perhaps, say, to prove your true devotion to protecting innocent lives, would you both do such a thing? Colin put her trembling hands in her lap under the table. She had seen the pain in Richard's eyes when he had watched that boy die. She knew her own pain. They had both seen innocent, sick children who were going to die. How many more would die? She would never be able to live with herself if the only way to save those children was to sacrifice her love, and she refused.
How could we not? Even if it would kill us, how could we not? But how could the good spirits demand such a price?
Colin suddenly remembered Denna's spirit taking the keeper's mark from Richard and freely choosing to go in Richard's place to eternal torment at the keeper's hands. That it turned out that Denna didn't have to face that fate didn't matter. She thought that she would, and had sacrificed her soul in the place of one she loved. The branches of a nearby maple tree clacked together in the gentle breeze. Colin could hear the flags atop Shota's palace snapping in the wind. The air tasted of spring. The grasses were a bright new green. Life was beginning to bud all around. Colin's heart felt like dead ashes.
Then I will tell you one other thing, Shota said, as if from a great distance.
Colin listened from the bottom of a well of despair. You have not heard the last message from the winds. You will receive one more involving the moon. This will be the consequential communion. Do not ignore it, nor dismiss it. Your future, Richard's future, and the future of all those innocent people will hinge on this event. Both of you must use all you have learned in order to comprehend the chance you will be offered.
Chance? Chance for what?
Shota's gaze riveted Colin. The chance to carry out your most solemn duty. The chance to save all the innocent lives of those who depend upon you to do what they cannot.
How soon?
I only know it will not be long. Colin nodded. She wondered why she wasn't crying. It seemed as if this was the most devastating personal tragedy she could imagine, losing Richard. And yet she wasn't crying. She guessed she would, but not now. Not here. Colin stared at the table.
Shota, you would try to stop us from having a child, wouldn't you? A boy child?
Yes.
You would try to kill our son if we had one, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Then how do I know that this isn't just some plot on your part to prevent us from having a child?
You will have to judge the truth of my words with your own mind and heart.
Colin remembered the dying boy's words and the prophecy. Somehow, she had known all along that she would never marry Richard. It was all just an impossible dream. When she was young, Colin had asked her mother about growing up and having a love, a husband, a home. Her mother had stood before her, beautiful, radiant, statuesque, but wearing her confessor's face.
Confessors don't have love, Colin. They have duty.
Richard was born a war wizard. He had been born for a purpose. Duty. She watched the breeze roll a few of the crumbs from the table.
I believe you,
Colin whispered.
I wish I didn't,
but I do. You're telling me the truth. There was nothing else to say. Colin stood. She had to lock her knees to stay upright on her trembling legs. She tried to remember where the Slifts' well was, but she couldn't seem to make her mind work.
Thank you for the tea,
she heard herself say.
It was lovely.
If Shota answered, Colin didn't hear it.
Shota?
Colin grasped the back of the chair to steady herself.
Could you point me in the right direction? I can't seem to remember.
Shota was there, taking her arm.
I will walk part way with you, child, Shota said in a soft, compassionate voice, so you may find your way.
They walked the road in silence. Colin tried to find cheer in the warm spring morning. It was still so cold in Adondrill. It had been snowing when she left. Still, she couldn't find any cheer in the fine day. As they climbed the stone steps cut into the cliff, Colin fought to regain a sense of purpose. If she and Richard could somehow save all those people from the plague, it would be a wonderful thing. Most wouldn't care about the sacrifice they made, but that wouldn't lessen the relief she would feel in the sound of a child's laughter or the sight of a mother's joy in her child's safety. There would still be things to live for. She could fill the void with the happiness to be seen in the eyes of her people. She would have done something no other could do. She and Richard would have stopped Jagang from harming all those people. Near the top of the cliff, Colin paused at a turn in the steps and looked out at Agaden Reach. It truly was a beautiful place, this valley nestled among the peaks of jagged mountains. She remembered that the keeper had sent a wizard and a skreeling to kill Shota. Shota had barely escaped with her life. She had vowed to regain her home.
I'm glad you got your home back. I'm glad for you, Shota, I really am. Agaden Reach belongs to you.
Thank you, Mother Confessor.
Colin looked to the witch woman's almond eyes.
What did you do to the wizard who chased you out?
What I said I would do. I tied him up by his thumbs and I skinned him alive. I sat back and watched as his magic bled from his skinless carcass.
She turned and gestured back down into the green valley. I covered the seat of my throne with his hide.
Colin remembered that that was precisely what Shota had promised to do. It was small wonder that even wizards rarely dared to enter Agaden Reach. Shota was more than a match for a wizard. One wizard, at least, had learned that lesson too late.
I can't say I blame you.
The keeper sending him to kill you and all. If the keeper had gotten you, well, I know how much you feared that.
I owe you and Richard a debt. Richard prevented the keeper from having us all.
I'm glad the wizard didn't send you to the keeper, Shota.
Colin really meant it. She still knew Shota was dangerous, but the witch woman seemed also to have a compassion that Colin hadn't expected.
You know what he said to me, this wizard? Shota asked.
He said he forgave me. Can you believe it? He granted me forgiveness, and then he begged mine.
The wind carried some of Colin's hair across her face. She pulled it back.
Seems a strange thing for him to say, considering.
The wizard's fourth rule, he called it. He said that there was magic in forgiveness, in the fourth rule, magic to heal, in the forgiveness you grant, and more so, in the forgiveness you receive. I guess the keeper's minion would say anything to try to get away with what he had done, and to get away from you. I can understand you not being in the mood to forgive him.
Light seemed to vanish into the ageless depths of Shota's eyes. He forgot to place the word sincere before forgiveness. Chapter 42. Colin watched the witch woman disappear back into the gloomy forest. Vines hanging down from craggy branches reached out to touch their mistress as she passed, while tendrils and roots stretched up to brush her leg. She vanished into a shroud of mist. Unseen creatures called in low whistles and clicks from the direction she had gone. Colin turned back to the moss-covered boulder Shota had shown her and, just beyond, found the Slif's well. The silver face of the Slif rose from beyond the round stone wall to watch as Colin approached. Colin almost wished the Slif hadn't come, as if, somehow, if Colin couldn't get back, none of the things she had learned would come to pass. How was she going to look into Richard's eyes and not scream in anguish? How was she ever going to be able to go on? How would she find the will to live?
Do you wish to travel?
The Slif asked.
No, but I must.
The Slif frowned as if well puzzled.
If you wish to travel, I will be ready.
Colin sank to the ground, put her back to the Slif's well, and folded her legs under herself. Was she to give up this easily? Was she to submit meekly to the fates? She didn't have a choice. Think of the solution, not the problem. Somehow, things didn't seem as desperate as they had back in the Reach. There had to be a way to solve this. Richard would not so easily give in. He would fight for her. She would fight for him. They loved each other, and that was more important than anything else. Colin's mind felt as if it were in a fog. She tried to focus with more resolve. She couldn't just give up. She had to face this with her old determination. She knew that witch women bewitched people. They didn't necessarily do it out of malice. It was just the way they were. It was like a person not being able to help the fact that they were tall or short or the color of their hair. Witch women bewitched people because that was the way their magic worked. Shota had bewitched Richard to an extent. Only the magic of the Sword of Truth saved him the first time. The Sword of Truth. Richard was the seeker. This was the kind of thing a seeker did. Solved problems.
She was in love with the Seeker. He would not so easily give up. Colin plucked a leaf and tore little strips from it as she began to reconsider everything she had been told by Shota. How much of it dare she believe? It was all beginning to seem like a dream from which she was just coming awake. Matters could not possibly be as desperate as she had thought. Her father had told her never to give up, to fight with every breath, with the last breath if need be. Nor would Richard give in easily. This wasn't ended yet. The future was still the future, and despite what Shota said, the matter was not yet decided. Something at her shoulder was bothering her. As she thought, she flicked her hand at it and then went back to tearing strips off the big leaf. There had to be a way to solve this. When she swatted at her shoulder again, her fingers hit the bone knife. It felt warm. Colin drew the knife and held it in her lap. The knife was warm. It seemed to pulse and vibrate. It grew so hot that it became uncomfortable to hold. Colin watched wide-eyed as the black feathers stood up. They danced and waved and twisted in a breeze. Her hair hung limp. The air was dead still. There was no breeze. Colin shot to her feet.
Sliff!
The Sliff's silver face was right there, close. Colin backed away a bit.
Sliff, I need to travel.
Come, we will travel. Where do you wish to go?
The mud people. I need to go to the mud people.
The liquid features contorted in thought.
I do not know this place.
It's not a place. They're people. People?
Colin tapped her chest.
They're people, like me.
I know different peoples, but not these mud people.
Colin pushed back her hair, trying to think.
They live in the wilds.
I know places in the wilds. Which one do you wish to travel to? Name it, and we will travel. You will be pleased.
Well, it's a place that's flat. It's a grassland, flat grassland. No mountains, like here.
Colin gestured around, but realized that the Sliff could see only trees.
I know several places like that.
Which places? Maybe I'll recognize them.
I can travel to a place overlooking the Calasidran River.
To the west of the Calasidran. The mud people are farther west.
I can travel to Tondalin Vale, the Harja Rift, Kia Plains, Sealan, Hercon Split, Andarin, Picton, the Jacopo Treasure.
The what? What was the last one?
She knew most of the rest of the places the Sliff named, but they weren't close to the mud people.
The Jacopo Treasure. Do you wish to travel there?
Colin held out the warm bone knife, grandfather's knife. Chandalan had told her how the Jacopo had made war on the mud people, and the ancestor spirits had guided Chandalan's grandfather in how to defend his people against the Jacopo. Chandalan had said they used to trade with the Jacopo before their war. The Jacopo had to be close to the mud people.
Say the last place again,
Colin said.
The Jacopo Treasure.
At the echoing words, the black feathers danced and twisted. Colin shoved the bone knife back in the band around her upper arm. She sprang up onto the stone wall.
That's where I wish to go, the Jacopo Treasure. I wish to travel to the Jacopo Treasure. Can you take me there, Sliff?
A silver arm swept her off the stone wall.
Come, we will travel to the Jacopo Treasure. You will be pleased.
Colin gasped one quick breath before she was plunged into the quicksilver froth. She let the breath go and inhaled the Sliff, but this time, numbed by troubling thoughts of losing Richard, of his marrying Nadine, she felt no rapture. Zed cackled like a madman. Anne was upside down in his vision. He stuck out his tongue at her and blew, making a long, crude sound.
You needn't attempt to pretend, she growled. It seems to be your natural state.
Zed moved his legs as if trying to walk upside down through the air. The blood was rushing to his head.
"Do you wish to die with your dignity?"
he asked her. "Or would you rather live?"
"I'll not play a fool."
"That's the word! Play! Ha ha! Don't just sit there in the mud! Play in it! Ha ha!"
She leaned over, putting her head close to his. He was standing on it in the mud.
"Zed, you can't possibly think such a thing would work."
"You said it yourself. You're mucking about with a crazy man. It was your suggestion."
"I suggested no such thing."
"Perhaps you didn't suggest it, but you were the one who gave me the inspiration. I'll be happy to give you full credit when we tell people the story."
"Tell people? In the first place, it won't work. In the second place, I realize full well that you would only be too delighted to tell people. That's just one more reason why I won't do it."
Zed howled like a coyote. He stiffened his legs and his spine, letting himself topple like a tree felled by an axe. Mud splashed on Anne. Fuming, she wiped a small splat from her nose. At the tall, stick fence, grim-faced Nang Tong guards watched the two prisoners, the two sacrifices. Zed and Anne had sat in the mud with their backs to one another and untied the ropes binding their wrists. The guards, armed with spears and bows, didn't seem to care. The prisoners couldn't get away. Zed knew they were right. Happy people had begun to stop by the pig pen at dawn. As the morning wore on, the crowd grew as more people stopped by to chatter with the guards and take a look at the fine offerings. Apparently, everyone was in a good mood because they now had a sacrifice for the spirits. Their lives would be safe after the unhappy spirits were appeased. The guards and the people of the Nang Tong village, watching from the other side of the fence, were now looking less pleased. They fidgeted with the cloth covering their faces, making sure it hid enough and that it was secure. The guards began wiping more ash on their faces and bodies. Apparently, one couldn't be too careful lest the spirits recognize them. Zed tucked his head down between his knees and rolled himself through the wet, sticky slop. He laughed maniacally as he rolled in a circle around Anne's squat figure sitting on the cold ground.
"Would you stop that?"
Zed spread supine in the mud before her. He swept his rigid arms and legs through the mud.
"Anne,"
he said in a low tone,
"we have important business. I think we might have better success if we attempt to carry out those tasks in this world rather than in the underworld after we are dead."
"I know we can't help if we're dead."
"It would stand to reason, then, that we need to get away now. Wouldn't it?"
"Of course it would," she grumbled. "But I don't think—"
Zed plopped himself down in her lap. She winced in disgust. Her nose wrinkled when he rested his muddy arms around her neck.
"Anne, if we do nothing, we die. If we try to fight these people, we will die. Without the use of our magic, we can't escape them. Our only option is to convince them to let us go. We can't speak their language, and even if we could, I doubt we would be able to persuade them."
"Yes, but we have only one chance, as I see it. We must convince them that we are quite loony. This sacrifice is a sacred service to their spirit ancestors. Look at the guards behind my back. Do they look happy?"
"Well, no." "If they believe that we're crazy, then they just might think twice before sacrificing us to their spirits. Wouldn't the spirits be insulted to receive a lunatic as a sacrifice, huh? Wouldn't that be disrespectful? Ha ha ha! We have to make them fear insulting their spirits with two loony people."
"But that's crazy."
"Look at it this way. A sacrifice is something like a treaty wedding between two peoples. The bride is the sacrifice of one people to another in the flesh of the new husband, all in the hope for a peaceful and productive future. The bride's new people treat her with respect. The bride's people treat the husband and his people with respect. It's all an arrangement symbolizing unity, continuity, and hope for the future. We are like the bride, being offered to the spirits. How would it look if the Nang Tong offered an unworthy, demented bride? If you were one of the spirits, wouldn't you be offended?"
If I got you in the bargain, I would be. Zed howled at the sky. Anne winced and pulled away from him.
It's our only chance, Anne.
He leaned close, whispering in her ear.
I swear an oath as first wizard that I will never tell anyone how you behaved.
He drew back and grinned at her.
Besides, it's fun. Remember how much fun it was as a child to play outside, to play in the mud. Why, it was the grandest of things.
But it might not work.
Even if it doesn't, wouldn't you rather die having fun on the last day of your life instead of sitting here afraid and cold and dirty? Wouldn't you rather have some childlike fun one last time? Let yourself go, prelate, and recall what it was to be a child. Let yourself do anything that comes into your head. Have fun! Be a child!
With a serious expression, Anne considered his words.
You won't tell anyone.
You have my word. You can act with childish glee, and no one but I will ever know. And the Nang Tong, of course.
Another of your acts of desperation, Zed.
The time for desperation is upon us. Let's play!
Anne smiled a sly smile. She stiff-armed him in the chest, knocking him back into the mud. With a riot of laughter, she leaped on top of him. They wrestled like children, rolling through the slop. After a half-dozen turns, Anne was a mud monster with arms, legs, and two eyes. The mud split, revealing a pink mouth as she howled with him at the sky. They made mud balls and used the pigs as targets. They chased the pigs. They flopped onto the hard, round backs of the squealing creatures, riding them around until they were tossed off into the mud. Zed doubted that Anne had ever been this dirty in her 9 centuries of life. He realized, while they were having a one-legged game of tag that involved more falling in the mud than hopping progress, that her laughter had changed. Anne was having fun. They stomped through puddles, they chased the pigs, they ran around the enclosure, rattling sticks against the fence, and then they hit upon the idea of making faces at the guards. They drew whimsical expressions on each other's faces in mud. They made every rude noise they could think of. They jumped and laughed and pointed at the solemn guards. Anne and Zed got to laughing so hard that they couldn't stand, and like two drunks they rolled on the ground, holding their sides. The crowd grew. Worried whispers swept through the onlookers. Anne stuck her thumbs in her ears and wiggled her fingers as she made faces at them. Zed stood on his head and sang a few lewd ballads he knew. Anne laughed hysterically as he mispronounced key words. Zed fell to laughing, and then fell in the mud, and then Anne fell on him. She sat on his stomach, pinning him to the ground as she tickled him under his arms, while he gasped for breath between laughter and tickled her ribs. The two of them had never had so much fun. The pigs cowered in the corner. Suddenly, buckets of water were dumped over the both of them as they were furiously engaged in trying to find each other's most ticklish spots. They looked up. More water rained down on them. As fast as the mud was washed off them, they dived back into it. Ash-covered guards seized them by the arms and held them at spear point while they were once again washed off. Zed peered over at Anne. She peered back. She looked ridiculous, her face emerging from streamers of slop. He giggled and made a face at her. She giggled and made a face back. The men yelled. Zed's cheeks puffed with attempts to halt his laughing. The guards shoved them forward, spears poking in their backs. It reminded him of being tickled, and they both laughed. It was as if once uncorked, the laughter had a life of its own. If they were to be sacrificed, what difference did it make? They might as well have the last laugh. The crowd of shrouded figures parted as the two prisoners were led out of the pig's pen. Giggling, Zed held his arm high and waved.
Wave at the people, Annie! Ha ha!
She made faces instead. Zed liked the idea and imitated her. People shrank back as if seeing a horrifying sight.
Some of the women wept and wailed. Zed and Anne laughed and pointed at them as the women ran from the crowd, seeking refuge from the lunatics. The tents and onlookers were soon left behind as their captors prodded them on with spears. Before long, the two dirty, smelly, happy sacrifices were out in the hills. 35 or 40 Nang Tong spirit hunters, all holding ready spears or bows, followed behind. Zed noticed that some of them had brought packs and provisions. First Wizard Zedekus Zul Zorander and Prelate Annalena Alderan skipped along ahead of the spears, laughing and making outrageous, ever-increasing claims as to how many onions they could eat without producing tears. Zed hadn't a clue where they were going, but it was a fine morning to be going there, wherever it was.
"It's kind of funny, Lord Raw,"
Lieutenant Crawford said. Richard gazed out over the boulder field. "What's funny about it?" The lieutenant bent his head back to peer up the cliff.
"Well, I mean, it's odd. I grew up in rugged mountains, so I've seen places like these mountains my whole life, but this place is odd."
He turned and pointed.
"See that mountain over there? You can see where the rock slide came from."
Richard put a hand over his brow to shield his eyes from the low afternoon sun. The mountain the lieutenant was pointing to was rugged and covered with trees except for the uppermost reaches. On the steep side facing them, a part of it had given way, leaving naked rock to scar the mountain where the rock had broken off. At the bottom of the barren scar lay a boulder field. "What about it?"
"Well, look at all that rock at the bottom. That's the portion that broke off the face of the mountain."
He gestured to the boulder field they stood atop.
"This isn't the same."
Another soldier approached and saluted with a fist to his heart. He cast a wary glance at Ulick and Egan, who were standing with their arms folded while he waited silently.
This is the end of this cassette.